Hey people, are you in the market for a very cool and original pair of sunglasses? Well, today's episode is being sponsored by Retrospects at the Cosmopolitan Hotel of Las Vegas. I've been wearing sunglasses from Retrospects for almost 5 years now, and honestly, there's nothing better on the planet. They have all the original stuff. They have all the modern-day interpretations of the original stuff. They do prescription. They do restoration. They do it all. Mention this ad and get 10% off your first purchase and free shipping for a limited time anywhere in the U.S. by emailing them at lasvegas@retrospects.com, or you can visit their website at www.retrospects.com. Okay, on with the show. On today's episode, I interview independent watchmaker Jean-Marie Schaller of Louis Monet Watches. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. What's going on there, watch fans? We're with my good friend, Jean-Marie Schaller from Louis Monet Watches. How are you doing, Jean-Marie?
Fine. Thank you, Amit.
So nice to see you, my friend.
Yeah, likewise.
You know, it's amazing. I met Jean-Marie last year. The Rob Report started at doing a dinner with the Mandarin Oriental last year. And, you know, being the official luxury timepiece concierge of the Mandarin Oriental, I have the privilege of doing it again for the second year in a row. And last year I met Jean-Marie through the graces of our mutual friend David Arnold, who's, you know, the vice president of the Rob Report.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for him, I would have never met you last year. And I met you at the Mandalay Bay when you were exhibiting at JCK 2014. And honestly, I feel so privileged and so honored and so lucky to not just know you, but to sit down here and interview you today. Can you, Jean-Marie, do you mind telling people who you are and what you do?
Well, yes, I'm Amit's friend, who is a great guy. And actually, I share the privilege, because it's always great if you travel and you meet people that lead a life that you don't even imagine, and behind people there is often a very interesting story. And so I was very glad to sit down with Amit and learn more about his life, his past experiences. And now he's the concierge of the Mandarin Oriental in Las Vegas, which is, I think it's something very special in the watch world. And as I said, for me it was a discovery, and we became instant friends. As for myself, I'm Swiss. I'm from the Jura Mountains. It's in the northern part of the country. It's a remote place. Not many people know. It is very much focused on watchmaking. You have landscapes with pine trees, a lot of snow in winter, small lakes, rivers, and
so great weather all the time, all day.
Yeah, it can be great weather. There's a lot of rain as well, of course. But in this area, we have a lot of people working for the watch industry. And as you know, the watch industry in Switzerland is based on what the Americans like to call a cottage industry.
Yeah.
Meaning that they are small manufacturers specialized in making pinions, wheels, gears, spirals, whatever it needs to make a watch. You know, inside a watch, inside a mechanical watch, there are 200 to 300 parts minimum, and all these parts, they have a precision which reaches the micron. So you speak about half a human hair. And they all work together
in cohesion to do one, to perform a function. And what amazes me is that most people don't understand why watches are so expensive. And it's because of that reason that you have these very skilled people who are specializing in making these parts. And it's a dying art, because there's not a lot of people who can do it and do it with that kind of precision, right?
Absolutely true.
And it, just to enlighten the listeners, what manufacturers are in the Jura Mountains?
or these companies that are making these pinions and all these various parts you mentioned, who are they making parts for? Independents and the major brands, or only the independents, or who are these, you know, these companies?
Well, these companies, you would not know the names, of course, but they have usually a very special knowledge, which means traditionally they have developed these skills, and sometimes it's unique. So in this case, they work for both the groups and the independents.
Wow, that's pretty unique.
It is. As you said, a Swiss watch is really, it's an art. You don't need a Ferrari. You don't need a Picasso.
No.
You don't need an expensive Swiss watch.
Right.
But it's art.
It is art. But the thing that makes this so autonomously unique from a Ferrari or from a Picasso is that it's accessible art that you can take with you anywhere, which you can't say about a Ferrari. You can't say about a Picasso. You can't put a Picasso in your pocket. You can't put, you know, a Ferrari in your pocket. But you can sit in a boardroom wearing a $500,000 tourbillon and make some sort of statement, whether good, bad, ugly, sophisticated, you know. And I think your brand is very interesting to me because, and Jean-Marie is being extremely humble, because he is humble, but he actually is the CEO and founder of a brand called Louis Monet. And Louis Monet is the man who invented the chronograph in 1815. And Jean-Marie is continuing that legacy, which is so impressive, and carrying it on with innovation and concepts and materials and all sort of different things. And how did you get into that? How did that start for you? Like, why Louis Monet? I mean, why him specifically for you?
Myself, I have been in the watch industry for more than 25 years. And the name of Louis Monet bounced back to me through different occasions. And, you know, it led me to think that it's part of my destiny. I was kind of forced to do it. And I really feel a mission. Louis Monet was a watchmaker, as you said, that lived in the 19th century, and he is the inventor of the chronograph. Now, it is very big to say that. It's like to have invented the chronograph in watches. It's like to have won 5 Super Bowls, I believe, in American football.
Yeah.
Well, when I started, you have to imagine that this watchmaker, he lived from 1768, and he died in 1853. And I restarted in 2000, and he was completely forgotten. We had no idea about what he did in his time, except all I had in my hands at that time, it was a 10-page biography, 10-page. And I guess it was, you know, like Lord Carnarvon in Egypt, trying to find Tutankhamun's tomb. In the Valley of the Kings, and searching, and at the end he found it. And for me it is like a fairy tale, because when I started, you know, some people mocked me.
Yeah.
And they were very reluctant about thinking that Louis Monet really was that big watchmaker that was described in his time. But now we have proven to the world that He was this amazing inventor, and also he made some clocks for the American presidents, for 2 American presidents actually, James Monroe and Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
And one of them is at Monticello, the Jefferson Heritage Museum, and the other one is still at the White House. And this clock that is at the White House is still today is one of the first original 10 objects that have furbished the White House.
And that's amazing.
Still there.
Yeah, I know. I read somewhere that Thomas Jefferson, when he was president, used it in the White House throughout his whole presidency.
Yes, you read this article,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Yes, actually, he read the time on his clock until his death.
That's unbelievable. And for all those of you out there, he also did some work for Napoleon. He also did some work. He also was an advisor to Abraham Breguet, the inventor of the tourbillon. He was an advisor for many years. But when you look at his watches, when you look at the watches today, what I like about them is there's fluidity, there's energy. And I think that that's what resonates with me when I look at an older Louis Monet or I look at the brand today. As your friend, I'm very proud of you, what you've been able to achieve, number one, because it's a phenomenal, phenomenal accomplishment. And number two, it's very hard to pay homage to the original, the inventors, you know, because a lot of times it's like, come on, anyone who does something in the beginning, they're looked at as gospel or God or, you know, but you really have carried on the tradition. And again, Jean-Marie has won, he just won an award in 2014, the UNESCO award in France. And it's funny, this is the second time we're meeting, but I feel like you're my brother from another mother. You know?
Thank you, Amit.
And
we don't have the same skin color.
I have a better tan than you. it's unbelievable. Like, so take me through this whole thing right now. So your factory is in Neuchâtel?
Yes, it is.
And how many employees do you have?
10. We have 10.
You have 10?
10 people, yeah.
So you have somebody doing, one person doing the finishing, one person doing the...
We have two watchmakers and we have some people preparing the parts for these two watchmakers.
Okay, and do you design every single thing yourself? Is it basically your concept?
Yes. I guess I may say the inspiration behind the brand. But as you know, we are never alone in this world. So to make such complicated watches, you need about 200 people.
Absolutely.
And it's something that is also very nice for me that with the time we have been able to build a chain of friends that from manufacturing to selling the product.
Amazing.
We really have a very good partnership. Yeah. And we put a lot of love in what we do because, as I said, product must have soul. This is a soul is something that we can speak about, but we do not see the soul. We have to feel it. And I think today, unfortunately, there are too many commercial watches that have been built just to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it is not what I want to do. We have a small production. We handcraft a few hundred of watches a year.
For the world.
For the world, yes, that's right. And what is important is that these are artistic pieces and really have a soul. That if you acquire one of these watches, I hope that then you are able to... It's a legacy that you will give to your son or to your daughter.
For the next generation and generation after.
Yeah.
And so what is, like, and I know that Louis Monet actually wrote a book, which is revered in the watch industry, about actual watchmaking. And it's probably one of the best books ever written, I've been told. Do you sell those books? Is that incorporated into your... you know, into your brand? Is that something that you... I'm sure you must be proud of it. I mean, it goes back to the 1800s, right?
Absolutely. To write a book at that time, it was very important. And because it was... A book was the summary of the knowledge that people had. And it was a way to transmit this knowledge to the next generation.
Amazing.
So Louis Monet actually took 20 years of his time to write this book that was published the first time in 1848. And as you said, it became the reference of its century. And still today is very much...
it's very important. It's almost biblical.
Yeah.
In the watch industry. So I'm sure a lot of what was written, I'm sure a lot of it had to do with also like what he learned working with Abraham Breguet as well, being an advisor, you know. But... You know, what other patents is he known for besides the chronograph? What else? I believe the crown guard. There's a specific crown guard that...
This is something modern that we have developed.
That you developed.
Yes, certainly. Louis Moinet was an artist before being a watchmaker.
Right.
So there is a reflection of this duality in his work. And you know, something amazing happened to me recently. I received a book from an auction house in Germany, and I look at this 500-page book, and all the watch from the 19th century or early 20th century, they all look alike, in my opinion. So I flip through the pages, and all of a sudden there is one that really captures my attention, because in this watch I felt the essence of what we are doing today.
Really?
And it is a Louis Moinet watch.
No way.
It was really...
How cool is that?
It was so cool.
Must have hit it home, right? On so many different levels. Because it was probably, you know, it's your company today. There's nobody telling you you're doing this right or you're doing it wrong. You're doing it from within.
Yes.
And that must have been the stamp, right?
It was the stamp, absolutely. Tick.
Yeah.
So we bought the watch and it was... very nice event. And also, recently I went to St. Petersburg. Not the one in Florida, but the one in Russia.
Just in case you were wondering.
And by chance, I didn't know, but we, my wife and myself, we discovered that in the Tsar's palace in St. Petersburg, in his bedroom, there is a Louis Moinet clock.
No way.
And then the following week, we received the description of this clock. Now, just imagine, in 1817, in Paris, which is the world capital for art and fashion at that time.
And Louis Moinet, by the way, was from France.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was from Bourges.
Yeah.
And then he studied the arts in Rome and in Florence, and then became a professor of Beaux-Arts, fine arts in Paris, and did his work in Paris, and came many times to Switzerland, because it was the place where he got his tooling. And also he got the knowledge speaking to the other watchmakers. But back to my clock, 1817 in Paris.
Right.
Louis Moinet, together with Philippe Thomire, who was the most famous bronze maker, they make two clocks. The subject of these clocks is the god of war. So one is Minerva.
Wow.
Is acquired from James Monroe, still today is at the White House. The other one is Mars. Is acquired from Alexander, the Tsar of Russia.
Wow.
Still today is in his palace.
That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It really shows that art is above politics.
100%. That's unbelievable. See, that's the history that I think most people don't know. Who may have even heard of Louis Moinet. They may not know of this.
Well, this is a scoop. Nobody knows. Except you who are listening.
That's unbelievable. And this is an exclusive interview. You know, this is Jean-Marie is very kind to do this interview. It's in fact, he just agreed to do it a few days back, and we're both actually drinking champagne and making funny faces at each other. But I think what resonates with me as well is this year at Baselworld 2015, you launched a watch that you released for the public that was an homage to Louis Moinet.
Yes.
And what makes that... It features the chronograph, which Louis Moinet is famous for. It not only highlights it, but it makes it the central focal point of the whole watch. And that watch is made in 18-karat rose gold. You want to tell people about what that watch is?
Yes, of course, Amit. This watch is called Memories. Memories, which means in memory of the invention of the chronograph. And Memories is the first ever chronograph watch, if I may say. I want to mean by that the chronograph is a central function of a watch. And all the chronograph parts have been built on top of the watch. Which means when you activate the chronograph, you can see all the mechanism working. from your thumb to the hand. And this is a world first. It's very difficult to describe on you know, with words. So if you are interested, I think you should Google it. But it's also interesting from a theoretical point of view because, as I said, it had never been made before. And if you think, why? Well, simply because the way watchmakers think, including me, we think about the time first, you know, hour and minute and seconds, and then the chronograph is the complication. And in this case, we thought vice versa. We thought of the chronograph first and then about the time itself.
And then?
And then we came up with this incredible creation.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So this watch, is it only available in rose gold, or do you make any in platinum? I know this is a 60-piece limited edition, right?
Yeah, all our watches are... Our motto, our philosophy is mechanical art in limited editions. Every watch is mechanical, there is no quartz. And all the watches are limited. It can be one piece, unique item. Happens to us quite frequently. And in this case of memories, there are 60 in rose gold and there are also 60 in white gold with a blue plate and another 60 in white gold with a silver plate.
Yeah, and I got a chance to see the rose gold Jean-Marie's wearing it this trip, and I got a chance to put it on. It's amazing. How big is the case?
A 46.5 millimeter.
Wow, and it's stunning. I mean, when you look at a Louis Monet watch, you know, you just realize it's elegance, you know. You can kind of see, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but you can kind of see as well, like, the influence of Breguet in there. I don't know if that's something that you consciously did, or if it's something that he did. I can see a lot of different influences in that watch.
No, I cannot.
You cannot?
No, because in my opinion, Monet is as important as Breguet.
Yeah.
And
but do you think he was, in a way, a student of Breguet?
No, absolutely not.
He wasn't. He was just as important as Breguet at that time.
Well, you know, Breguet, when he met Moinet, was already very famous.
For what he did?
Yeah. And he had his company and he was a leader watchmaker. And Moinet worked for Breguet.
Right.
He even lived in his own house.
Right.
And he lived in his own house not to lose time, and because they were passionate people and they worked night and day. And Moinet was the contrary of the other watchmakers. He was very humble and he was passionate about watchmaking. So what he did it for himself and for the sake of the development of its art, not for his own glory.
Right.
So this is why it was so difficult to find the traces, you know.
Of his work,
yes.
So mostly it's clocks. Did he ever do watches at that time?
Oh, yeah, clocks and also pocket watches.
But not wristwatches, because that was too early?
Oh, of course, yeah. The first wristwatches were made in 1915.
Wow.
So Breguet also never did any wristwatches when he was alive.
It was all only pocket watches.
Yeah.
And what year did Monet die again? Pass away?
1853.
Wow. So when you said that the first example of watches were in 1915.
Yes, it is because at that time there was a First World War and the pilots, they needed to have a watch.
So there were pilot watches made for them?
Pilot watches, yes, and wristwatches. And because of this, fashion came for the wristwatches.
And who manufactured or made those watches at that time? Because if he wasn't alive, the company was still going?
Louis Monet, he passed away in 1853. And after that, his name was forgotten. But your question is very interesting, because in 1870, the world leader for quality watches, it was not Switzerland, it was America.
Yep, that's right.
You had the Waltham Watch Factory.
You did.
And even Henry Ford, when he wanted to start his company, he went to see in Massachusetts the Waltham Watch Factory, and he modeled the Ford Motor Company after the Waltham.
It's amazing.
But, yeah, they were world leaders.
And Waltham was down the street from where I'm from in Boston, so it's...
Is this right?
Yeah. I'm from Lexington, and Lexington is down the street from Waltham, so...
The original Waltham?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Do you see how we're going full circle, buddy?
Yes, certainly.
That's amazing. So you're saying that they were produced in America?
Yeah, they invented the first real watch manufacturer, Waltham.
Wow.
1870. And they were world leaders. I mean, Waltham and the other American manufacturers.
Hamilton at that time as well.
Elgin, yeah, sure.
Elgin.
Until 1910.
That's unbelievable.
And the cottage industry, the Swiss cottage industry, was nearly dying.
It was, yeah, of course.
There is a report from the Philadelphia exhibition in 1876 where a Swiss delegation, they said, you know, if we do not wake up, we are finished in Switzerland.
Wow.
And then the world erupted, the war erupted. And it changed the fashion. So the Americans, they did some other products than watches. And the Swiss carried on with wristwatches instead of pocket watches. And they became world leaders again.
Yeah, and they took that all the way till the 80s, I would say.
Absolutely.
Before the Japanese kind of infiltrated them. And that's a whole other story, but...
Exactly one century after.
Yep, exactly, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So when you look at Louis Monet's influence on the world, even after he died, his legacy carried on, you know, in a way. And he was very relevant. What's amazing to me is how relevant he was with world leaders at that time.
Yes.
You know, because you only hear about Breguet. You don't really hear about Louis Monet. And you, like you said, he was forgotten about. He was, and that's, you've done an incredible service to reinvigorating his name, to carrying on his legacy. Like, what do you, like, do you always have in mind what he had in mind, knowing what you know about him, when you make a certain model? Like, do you always say, you know what, he incorporated this, and I want to keep this consistently in my watches?
Yes. If you come to our office, we have about 20 posters on which we have written some statements from Mr. Moinet that I copied when I read his book. And these are principles. I think he was a very good man. So not only for watchmaking, but also good principles.
As a good person.
As a good person, yes. And
which is the same in you as well.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I may be a bit crazy, but I like to think that he's still today that he influences us from where he is. So, for me, to answer your question, yes, it is very important. As I said, that our watches, they have a soul, and this soul comes from the contemporary as well as from the historical part of the Louis Moinet story.
Which is, and it's pretty amazing, at that time, they weren't really doing limited editions in the way that they're perceived today, in terms of, unless they were made for a specific reason. But, you know, like, you know, the Thomas Jefferson clocks, and the Napoleon's clocks, and the James Madison clocks, I mean, how many of those did he make? He made one, right, of each?
Well, you know, as you said, today when we make limited editions, when we create a model, then we make, for instance, one with a black dial and one with a white dial, because some people, they prefer white, some other people, they prefer black.
Yeah.
So, also, we noticed that in his time, when the bronze was made, sometimes the base the decoration of the base of the bronze was different from one to the other. So he could have made like 3, 4, 5 pieces with the same clock and different bases.
Wow.
So...
they were all different.
Yeah, they were all different.
It's amazing. That's real. And what is the earliest example of a Louis Monet that you have in your, as far as, you know, in your archives?
As I said before, when we started, we had absolutely no archives. And we have been collected everything we could from Louis Moinet. Sometimes in auctions the price was too expensive for us, but we have collected so far about 15 clocks, about 10 pocket watches, some historical correspondence, 60 pages from 1822, and his book, of course. We have about 35 copies of his book.
Originals.
Originals.
Wow. And those will never be sold to the public?
No, they will never be sold.
Now, will you reproduce those in any way?
You know, it is written in French. It is written in French, and I'm not sure that it would be so interesting
to know in English.
To be reproduced and translated in English.
That's amazing.
Wow. And we have this first ever chronograph, of course. And you know, it is not only the first ever chronograph, it is also the first high frequency watch.
Really?
Yes. Wow. If you take a today you go to the store and you buy an automatic watch.
Yeah.
It beats at normally 28,800 vibration an hour.
Yeah.
It means that in an hour your watch make 28,800 movements back and forth.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. It's like a heart beating, you know, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, just imagine that the chronograph he made in 1815 beats at 216,000 vibration an hour. You know, I spoke to experts because I had been looking for this watch long ago.
That's unbelievable.
Yes, and experts, they said, this is not possible. But it is. It's the first...
216,000... beats per hour.
Yes, and for a simple reason. It is because he wanted to measure the 60th of a second.
Right, he's the one who invented that, right?
Yeah.
The 60th of a second for the chronograph.
At the time, Breguet, he mentioned the 10th of a second.
That's right, yeah.
60th of a second was the most accurate time device of its
time. Wow. So his influence and power and legacy is so important because... I mean, it's an instrument we use today, and one of the most important instruments to record time.
True. I think it is fair to say that we have rediscovered the Leonardo da Vinci from watchmaking.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because, as I said, when he was in his 10-page biography that we had 10 years ago, the Mr. Delmas, who was the vice president of the Chronometry Society of Paris...
Right.
Whose Louis Moinet was the president, he said Louis Moinet is such a good man and he is one of the best watchmakers that ever lived. You know, for me, honestly, it was difficult to believe because we had no proof.
Right.
We had nothing.
But then as time unfolded and you got these clocks and these pocket watches and this correspondence, I'm sure you realized very quickly that it's absolutely true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And would you say that, like, you know, the brand today, you know, through your vision, how many countries are you in?
We are in about 20 countries.
Wow. 20 countries. Now, just imagine for a second, people, just to give you a landscape of what we're talking about, if we're comparing it to a mass-produced watch. So Rolex makes about close to a million watches a year for the world. You know, what's considered extremely exclusive in the watch industry, as far as a mainstream brand goes, like Lange & Söhne or Patek or Vacheron. You know, Vacheron makes less than 20,000. Patek makes about 60,000. You guys make a couple of hundred pieces a year. I mean, they are art pieces. You know, they really are art pieces. Built for a specific reason, for a specific client, you know, and for a specific function. And that's as exclusive as you're going to get, you know?
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. I mean, it amazes me, like, I'm sure you have visions for the next 5 or 10 years of where you see this company going. But what's your overall, like, would you say, like, when you first gave rebirth to this company, Could you ever picture it where it is today? At that time? Or has it exceeded the expectations you've had?
It has, yes.
It has.
When I started, I wanted to do my own watches and really give birth to some artistic products, being myself a creative person. And so far we have made some very nice things, like being the first and only one in the watch sector to produce watches with a moon meteorite, with meteorites from planet Mars.
Wow.
Was the oldest known piece from the solar system, 4,566,000,000 years old.
And I saw that piece last year at JCK 2014. I had the opportunity to see it. It's very cool.
That's a cool piece, isn't it?
It is a very cool piece.
It's something you cannot buy.
No, you can't.
You know, I have got this very exclusive meteorite from my friend Luc Labenne. Luc is the leader meteorite hunter. You know, there are not many meteorite hunters in the world. There are about 10 of them. And Luc is from Paris, and he's the number one. So thanks to him, I have been able to get some unbelievable pieces, like the only meteorite that bears the name of New York, for instance.
Wow. And why?
Why? It didn't fell in New York.
Okay.
It came from the North Pole.
Okay.
But it was traded in New York.
Wow. Okay.
And this is why they gave it the name of New York back in 18...
So it was traded in New York in the 1800s?
1870, wow. I believe, yeah.
Wow. See, that you're getting exclusive exclusive compounds and components on a Louis Monet today that have heritage even back then, that have history, that's relevant, you know, to modernity. And that's got to be tough for you as well, right? To combine modernity and to combine history and to give both equal respect without compromising the integrity of the brand, right? You've got to walk a very fine line almost, right?
Well, actually, we do this quite naturally. I think the watch has to tell a story.
Yep.
And to do so, it has to have a strong character.
Yep.
So as you said, we mix technology and we mix exotic materials. We have also fossilized palm tree. We use stromatolite, the oldest fossil in the world.
Wow.
We have a collection called Treasures of the World. Unique item, only one piece, made in exotic materials such as labradorite, or bronzite, or fossilized sequoia. And it really comes naturally. And then we just must be happy with the result. And, you know, when you imagine a watch, first it is in your head. You have nothing. Then from your head it goes to paper. From paper it goes to 3D. But sometimes you have a dial that looks good, and once it is assembled in the watch, it is not so good.
It looks like shit, yeah.
Champagne again. I'm very sorry for his vocabulary. It could be the contrary as well. A dial that doesn't look so good once it is assembled, it looks terrific.
Is there any watch that you've produced in your collection that's exactly how you envisioned it?
Most of them, I must say.
Yeah?
Yeah, most of them.
That's good.
We don't have that... I think from the head to the final product, maybe we lose 10%, but not more than that.
That's amazing.
We had one, though, once that I tried to do a watch that was looking like the Eiffel Tower, and this was really shit at the end.
I'm sorry, now Jean-Marie is getting affected by the champagne.
Well, I had my glass.
Yeah, you had six. No.
Not six bottles, six glasses.
Six glasses. That's really impressive. Now, is there any collaborations you want to do in the future that you would think would give importance to your brand?
When you say collaborations, you mean with fashion?
It could be with technology. It could be with fashion. It could be with history. It could be with art. It could be with pop culture. Like, is there anything you've thought of that you've wanted to do?
This is a very interesting question. You know, when I started, I felt the name at that time, it was still weak. And because of that, I thought a lot of times to create cooperation with designers or ambassadors or whoever that could bring me some kind of strength. And today, because the brand has matured, because we have found everything we mentioned from a historical level, and also the brand has gained recognition, our products have won 5 Red Dot Awards. 5.
And I'm not talking about the red dots as in the bindis that Indians wear on their forehead.
Yeah, the red dot is considered...
The Red Dot Award.
No, it's not this red dot. It's another red dot.
Can you explain how important the Red Dot Award is and what it signifies in the watch industry?
Many people consider the Red Dot as being the highest design prize in the world. Design prize.
It's pretty amazing, man.
Yeah. And to have won 5 is, I mean, it's fantastic.
It's massive. Yeah. In a 15-year period.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, back to what you asked. No, today, if some people ask us, do you want to do this, do you want to do that, do you want to do jewelry, do you want to do glasses, do you want to do leather articles? No, Louis Moinet was a watchmaker and so are we. And we have to focus on our core product and hopefully to bring some nice emotions to our friends who buy the watches. So we are not thinking about doing a Louis Moinet watch associated with a designer or anything like that.
Now, is there anything from the archives, like the pilot's watches after his death, you'd bring back? Or would you bring back the clocks? Or would you bring back any of that stuff? You know, would you do a commemorative, you know, like a Thomas Jefferson commemorative clock or things like that? Have you thought about that?
Louis Moinet crafted the Thomas Jefferson clock in the 1816, I believe. And this was 200 years ago. Today, emotions are different. We live in a different world. And as I said, I believe Louis Moinet inspired us to create some product that are made for people that live today. So it would be easy, of course, to reproduce something that has been done, but I don't really see the point in doing that.
That's really cool, man. Because you know what? A lot of brands, especially like you're not a mainstream brand by any stretch of the imagination, would find it just say, okay, let's just reproduce the dial and reproduce the casing and all that. But what's even harder is to find that inspiration within that history to produce something modern. That's a challenge. And that, I think, is very important, what you just said. You know, because I don't see a lot of, even the mainstream brands. I mean, you see them bringing back stuff from 200 years ago and maybe using the elements that are available today, like silicone or whatever it may be. But what you're actually doing is a lot more difficult.
But at the same time, it is what drives us.
Yeah, of course. And like you said, it's organic. It just happens naturally for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. It is 10 years ago, you know, I had a divorce and my ex-wife was a watch designer. So it's a small world and I didn't want to work in the watch industry. I was, you know, not feeling so good. And I tried to go to work for a headhunter. And they interviewed me and I passed the test, but then I had to go say hello to the big boss. It was just to say hello and drink a coffee.
Right.
And when I came back, they told me, we cannot hire you. And I said, but I passed the test and you told me it was all right. Why don't you take me? And they said, because the boss has said you must work in the watch sector. And this is apparently the only sector where I can bring something good, because
Wow. There
are 100 things in this world I cannot do. So to create watches, can you imagine how lucky we are?
Yeah.
To imagine products in our head and then to make them physically.
And bring them to life.
And then to travel the world, to be with you here today and to discuss
That's
about
amazing.
This.
That's amazing.
And to share an emotion.
You know, people, you have to be very, consider yourselves very lucky. I'm lucky to sit in front of him, but you're lucky to listen to it, because this will last forever. He's a he's an extremely humble man, and he's a very gifted man, and he's a very special person, and his watches emulate that as well, beyond the history, beyond the influence, beyond the heritage. It radiates who he is as a person as well. And I think that that's quite an amazing accomplishment. And I'm really happy and proud that I was able to do this today. And I really, really want to thank you for your time. And I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you so much, Amit.
Well, there we have it, folks. That was my one-on-one interview with good friend, independent watchmaker, a hell of a nice guy, Jean-Marie Schaller of Louis Monet Watches. That was probably one of the most important interviews I've ever done to date, and it was an incredible history lesson for me. I hope you got out of it as much as I did. I look forward to seeing Jean-Marie when I get back to Switzerland soon enough, and he's just an incredible person. So thank you so much, Jean-Marie, and I wish you continued success. I'd also like to thank my sponsor, Retrospects at the Cosmopolitan Hotel of Las Vegas. There's nothing to think about. If you're looking for the best sunglasses, whether it be vintage, vintage-inspired, restoration, prescription, they do it all. To get 10% off your first purchase and free shipping for a limited time, email them at lasvegas@retrospects.com. Visit their website at www.retrospects.com. I'd also like to thank Shellboy Music and DJ Flipside for providing the musical tracks to this podcast. If you want to know what's going on with me and the watch industry, please check out my website at www.amitdevhonda.com. Feel free to email me at amitdevhonda@gmail.com. You want to see the coolest pictures of watches all over the world and links to relevant articles within the watch industry, check out my Twitter and my Instagram. My handle's at amitdevhonda. You can also check out my Facebook watch page. Don't forget to like it. And if you want to, you know, get updated without being committed on a daily basis, definitely check out, sign up for my free newsletter. Sign up once and you're done. I'll make sure the link is provided below. And until we meet again, rock on and fly back.